Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while GEICO could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, GEICO has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Welcome to another edition of the Superflight Podcast, your Hieronymus Boschian NBA podcast. Because, hell. Tweet at me if you want to know what I mean, if you don't get it. Anyway, what's up, everybody? It is Friday, February 17th, and I'm your host, as always, Joe Borelli, coming at you. Sorry, I've been very sporadic this week, and as you can probably hear my voice, I've been really sick this week. So, I missed a couple of days of work. I've been doing a lot of sleeping. But the other night, I did feel well enough to guest on Inside the Cylinder with David Fernandez and Joey Mack over at the ABPN. You can check that out. It's your 18 Pistons podcast. So what I'm going to do tonight is I'm just going to probably skip my opening ramble and just add this on to their podcast and release it as a super flight. So you can get the best of both worlds. We talk a lot about the Sixers because, you know, I was guesting and they wanted to talk about the Sixers. So they know I'm a huge fan, even though I do all of the NBA. I'm a very big Sixers fan. And we talk about the Pistons, which was fun, and the situation over there. But for me, I don't really have that much to say this week. I'll tell you that you can obviously follow the podcast at Twitter, at SuperflightPod. You can follow me personally at Joe Borelli on Twitter. You can email the show, thesuperflightpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow on Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, Music, whatever else is out there that you listen to iTunes or podcast on, you can listen to this podcast there. And yeah, I think that's about it. I can tell you the guys that I've been doing a lot of sleeping this week, and you know, I, as most people do, I love sleeping. It's fantastic. But when you're sleeping and you're sick, it's just not the same. You're just sleep. You're sick sleeping, which is kind of very uncomfortable, filled with backaches and fever and sweating and coughing and sneezing and congestion and just like general misery. It's not an enjoyable sleep. Like if I'm going to knock off of work, man, I always think that like, if I'm not going to work, I want to go into work, not go into a work in work into work, sorry, on a day when I'm healthy so I can go out and do things, you know, and just play hooky and have a fun day. Although I have this severe guilt complex. So I never do that anyway. I can't tell you the last day I actually knocked off of work and I was healthy. I only ever take off of work when I'm actually sick, which, you know, makes me a great employee, but also kind of a dummy. Whatever, you know, I believe in, working hard at your job. I work pretty hard at this job for some dumb reason and I don't get paid for it, but that's okay. Cause I love it. So, you know, those things are, you know, that actually just reminds me of a story. I don't know. Do you guys want to sit around for a story? You want to hear a Joe Borelli story? All right. I have a really dear friend back home in Pennsylvania, and he and I grew up together. We went, you know, we were best friends in high school. We were in bands together. You've probably heard me talk about him several times before. His name is Steve. What's up, Steve? So back in the day, before I went to college, I went right from high school into the working world, the workforce. And, you know, because I'm from a blue-collar area, and we did blue-collar things, and I thought, you know, let me do the manly right blue collar thing and go to and get a job, right? So he and I used to work these really crappy factory jobs. And boy, when you're in your 20s and stuff, you just, the last thing you want to do is go to work. We would routinely, I would say at least once a month, we would end up on a Sunday night commiserating at a bar and being like, man, I don't want to go to work tomorrow. I really don't want to go to work tomorrow. This is awful. I don't want to go to work tomorrow. And so we would often probably just end up getting, you know, a little more toasty than we should and then calling off the next day. And, you know, it's as young adults do. Well, I don't know if he wants me to tell this story. Actually, maybe I should get his permission to tell this before I go telling it. But Steve, I won't go into any details if you're listening to this. But one night in particular, we were out at a bar. You know what? I'll just tell this part of the story. We were dumb. We thought we were being cool. And these girls were actually, you know, kind of interested in us because we were sitting there at the bar drinking. And there was a basketball game on, right, on the big screen. We're sitting there and the girls come over and they want to sit down and they want us to buy them drinks. They're like, oh, okay, cool. We're talking. And they're like, what are your names? And I'm like, and I look over at the screen and the first player's name that I saw, I was like, oh yeah, my name, it's John, John Starks. And I don't even remember what my buddy Steve said, but they pretty quickly gathered that we were full of BS. And I don't know why we thought we were going to be cool and trying to impress them with fake names. I don't ask, man. Don't ask. I still can't explain what we were thinking to this day, because if we were cool, we might have been able to get lucky that evening. Unfortunately, most of my life has been spent not being cool. And so here I am. Anyway, yeah, a little stupid anecdote about my my youth. I guess it wasn't as funny to you as it probably was to me. In any case, so I'm cutting this short tonight. I'm going to play the rest of this show that I did with the guys from the Almighty Baller A-Team Pistons podcast, which is Inside the Cylinder with C-Y-L-I-N-D-E-R. And I'll let them take it from here. So sit back and enjoy. Be right back.
So we interrupt this great podcast that you're listening to. My name is Kevin Rayfuse.
I'm Tim Tompkins.
And I'm Justin Cousart.
And we host the Drive and Dish NBA podcast.
We cover every team in the league and a bunch of really fun segments like Random NBA Player, Drive and Dougal, and Hot Takes from Reddit.
So when you're done listening to this podcast, give us a search on iTunes or whatever podcast streaming app you're listening on.
We're also at driveanddishpodcast.com. We are the Drive and Dish NBA podcast.
Hello and welcome to Inside the Cylinder, your podcast home for all things Detroit Pistons and member of the A-Team on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. I'm one of your co-hosts, Joey Mack. I would like to welcome you to my other co-host, David. Say what up, David.
What's up, everyone? David Fernandez here. You can follow this show on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict. You know, wherever it is you're listening to podcasts, we will be there as well. So feel free to like and subscribe and send us some feedback. We're also on almightyballer.com. And smooth transition, another one of our guests today is also on almightyballer.com. My good friend, Joe Borelli from the Superflight podcast. So big welcome from Inside the Cylinder to Joe. What's up, Joe?
What's up, guys? Happy to be here.
Yeah, happy to have you on. It's good to finally kind of repay the favor. I think I talked about it originally when the show kind of started to formulate, and that you were going to definitely be on the podcast once I figured out how to do this thing. Not that I know what I'm doing at all at this point, but to have you on.
Thanks. Join the club. Nobody knows what they're doing ever. Just so if you fake it till you make it.
Yeah, that's literally, I think that was like literal advice from you. It's like, oh, I've been faking it this whole time. What are you talking? That's how I got the show. But definitely glad to have you on. And in case you don't know, well, first of all, go check out the Superflight podcast. I believe on Twitter they're at Superflight Pod.
Yeah, I can.
And what's up?
You can follow on Twitter at Superflight Pod. You can also follow, or you can email the show at the Superflight Podcast at gmail.com. You can follow me personally at Joe Borelli on Twitter at Joe Borelli. I'm not going to spell it, it's too long. But yeah. And
there's a double L in there, just in case.
There's two L's. Yeah. And at ABPN, where we all are.
Yeah, of course. And in case you don't know, the Superflight Pod podcast is a general NBA podcast. So one of my questions, at least right off the bat, was for Joe. So I find it difficult, and Joey Mack over here, so there's two Joes in the room, so I'm going to be calling one Joey, and that's the Inside the Cylinder, one Joe, that's a Super Flight, is that I think it's hard enough, honestly, for me to follow the Pistons like religiously as much as we do, and it's an I enjoy it 100%, but it is still difficult to kind of pay attention to every single avenue that's going on with the team. And I don't know how people do it in general, especially with our busy schedules, but how do you do it and follow the entire NBA, especially with like the West Coast games? Like, I find it hard enough to stay up for a Portland Detroit game, let alone any other West Coast game that's going on. So,
well, to be honest, I'll have to ask Zach Lowe and get back to you, because I can't do it either. It's hard, man. It's definitely not easy. Like, League Pass Rewind, that helps a lot. You can watch like a whole game in like 10 minutes. But I mean, I have to pick
the condensed and choose game option.
What's that?
There's the condensed game options, like 10 minutes of a game, and it just kind of like shows you the highlights of what happened. Not the highlights, but the kind of the meat of the game for the most part.
Exactly, yeah. Well, I think it shows you like every scoring play is what it does.
Right,
it
yeah.
It brings it down to like 10 minutes, which I don't know why they can't just play the game that way. It'd be awesome.
Do you ever listen to the initial, like right after a game's over, they'll have like in that night they'll do the reads of the games, and they'll be like the 2 minute highlights, and there's that guy's voice that's so ridiculous. It sounds like he's out of like either, I don't know, like an adult film, or he's out of like some really crappy like rock jock like XM radio station just doing these like live reads with John Wall to the hoop.
Yeah, and it's
just
like,
well, and everything rhymes too. If I don't know if you call that.
There's the one guy,
like a disc jockey who's like trying to be a rapper at the same time.
Yeah. There's the one guy that rhymes everything. There's another guy that, I think he's an older gentleman, who he's really just emphatic when he reads the stuff back, and then there's the guy that rhymes, and then sometimes I think what's her face? Kristen Ludlow does it or something? I don't know. But
oh, nice.
And she says "and" way too many times. But anyway.
We all got our ticks.
We all do have our ticks, yeah. I have this nervous laugh. I don't know if you've noticed. Anyway, to get back to your question, it's difficult. You know, I have to because I'm a big Sixers fan. Like, I think anybody that listens to my show knows that. And I watch almost every one of their games. But I have to, like, jump back and forth between games. I have to, you know, pick up games where I can. And, like, watching West Coast games is really, really difficult. So, for me, I often, you know, like, in my show, I lean on guys like you to help me out with your teams. Because, like, I know which teams I'm watching. I know which teams I can get to watch as often as I can. And I try and pay attention and read as much as I possibly can. But there's no way any human being can watch every single game every single night. It's impossible.
Sure. And one thing that I was so impressed, I remember when you had me on your show a couple months ago now at this point, you sent me, we were going over the outline for the show, and we're like, all right, you know, obviously we're going to talk a little Philly, we're going to talk a little Detroit basketball, but we also want to talk about some of these other sort of, you know, concepts, like the baby Lakers when they were on their hot streak, and Oklahoma City and Russell Westbrook and stuff. And it was just like laden with like stats and figures and, you know, just, and I was just so impressed. I was like, oh my God, I got to go home and I got to watch some movie. I got to watch some games right now. I got to, like, I don't know what's going on with Houston yet. Like, I don't know, just all that kind of stuff. And there's, I don't know, I was just really impressed. And
you shouldn't know, I think be, because I just did all that on the spur of the moment. I was like, I got to find something out. I got to figure out what I'm talking about here. I was doing the exact same thing, man.
Even going to stats.nba.com and being able to pull, or wherever basketball reference, wherever it is you're getting your stats from, even to be able to pull enough content from that right away and to make talking points, I think it's pretty great. But no,
a big part of that too, I feel like, from that perspective, is like knowing how to find those statistics and like knowing which ones are relevant and knowing what, like, you know, sort of the acronyms mean as well. And I think if you can kind of just like streamline that process, that just makes everything a lot easier for sure.
Well, when you figure it out, let me know, because I still have no idea how to do it.
I haven't. I'm behind the eight ball on that.
I think it's just a matter of doing it. Like, for me, like, the more I do it, the better you get at it, obviously. Like, I really wish often that I had somebody here showing me how to do this stuff, because I'm figuring it out on the fly. Like, I like to think of myself as a reasonably intelligent person, but, you know, when it comes to stats and that kind of thing, it's incredibly difficult. It's a lot of writing things down, a lot of typing things into my computer so I can pull it up later when I'm talking to somebody. And it's actually, believe it or not, it's kind of easier to to guest on somebody's podcast, because they usually have to do the legwork for you. I love that. Thank you guys. And secondly, it's actually easier to do a podcast over the internet, to be honest with you, because when I had a partner and I used to do it, we used to do it together. We would sit in the same room and we'd have to sit there with our iPhones and be like, all right, what were we talking about? Like, I have to look at this, or I have to pull out a piece of paper and like scroll through my book, and like, you could hear this rustling in the background. Like when I'm talking to you guys, I'm just looking at you and I'm looking at my screen, and I can pull up stats and mess with my computer at the same time. It's just, it's seamless, and it's way more sort of enjoyable, except for I'm a little bit lonely now.
Yeah, no, well, you know, if you ever need someone, just either a shoulder to cry on, or just another guest, you know, reach out to one of us and we'll be happy to hop on.
Totally.
Yeah, I guess on that point, one thing that I was, you know, I guess it's a little sidebar, but, you know, it makes you so jealous sometimes of like, True Hoop TV, and even I mean, Zach Lowe, he does so much work. You can tell that he's the one doing all the work. He's not getting spoon fed, but a lot of these people are kind of getting a lot of stuff kind of handed to them, like their producers are, and that'd be just so nice, just have all these like nice stats all ready for you to go. But you know, I think that's learning about the game, going through the stats yourself, is something that you really do start to either make sense of what it is that you either get to solidify your own thoughts of what you were seeing in games, or the contrary to that. You're seeing like, okay, well, maybe I'm leaning a little bit too much on my eye test, and, you know, being able to look through the stats, you do finally get to see at least a different viewpoint, or a viewpoint that's, you know, solidifying what it is that you thought. So I think it's good for just a general basketball mind to be able to do that, just to not obviously rely on the eye test.
Right. Or it could be total confirmation bias, you know? You're like, oh, these stats are proving out what I thought.
That's true. No, I find difficulty in that in writing sometimes. And, yeah, you can go check that out at DetroitBadBoys.com. But anyways, so nice. Another question I had. So I know you're a Philly guy, so, you know, big Sixers fan. And congratulations to you. And, you know, this has been the most exciting season for them.
I did it all myself. You did it. Thank you.
Hey, positive tweets. You know, you're putting out good vibes into the atmosphere. So I think that's.
Did you trust the process the entire way?
I trusted. No, not kidding. Yeah, I trusted the process the entire way. I still trust the process.
What were your thoughts when he was fired? When
Hinkie, he didn't really.
Yeah, when Hinkie was fired,
he stepped down. He got. What's the word? It was a coup, I guess, basically, but.
Was cool.
I was not happy, man. I'm still not happy about it. I really miss Hinkie. And let me tell you, you know what? Do you guys know about what's happening with the Jahlil Okafor trade?
The rumors? What do you mean?
Well, he didn't travel with the team the last couple of days because he was going to be traded, right? There was this whole trade wind surrounding him. And, like, they even came out and said, like, he's not going with us to Orlando. And he didn't go with them to, there was another game, I forget, they won. Anyway. He was with them the night in Boston, and he played, but they held him out, and they said, we're not bringing him with because he's probably going to be traded in the next couple of days. Like, that seems normal. Guys, it happens all the time. Guys get traded, like, right away, the next day. It was, like, it's, what, 6 days later now or something like that? And he's back with the team, and Brian Colangelo has fumbled the ball on this so badly. Like, I don't think Hinkie would have ever even gotten close to like,
Butchering it.
Thank you, for lack of a better word.
Well, that doesn't do anything positive for his trade value either at this point. If you can't pull the trigger immediately, then he's just kind of sitting around, and, you know, what are you going to do with him?
Well, yeah, that, and, like, also, like, way to build some, you know, fan
confidence in young players.
Yeah, that. But, like,
well, there's a whole thing going on with Nerlens Noel too, right? Where, like, he wasn't getting playing time and he was getting frustrated, and that just kind of, like, travels down the food chain. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, these are two totally different subjects, or they're mixed together. But they're. Let me talk about the Jahlil thing quick. Way to build fan resentment towards your organization, or build some sort of sympathy toward the guy that everyone wanted to see gone because he doesn't fit the team. Like, for starters, like, everyone feels bad for Jahlil Okafor now. Like, I feel terrible for this guy. Can you imagine? Just for a second, and I love doing this because my most, like, the things I care about the most in the NBA are just interpersonal relationships and people in general, right? Imagine you're at work. I don't know what you guys do for a living. You don't have to tell me. But imagine you're at work, and you know that everyone at work thinks you're not good at your job. They think that you're not good, and they want to get rid of you. And they ask you to just stay home for a couple days. And then they ask you to come back? Well, they're like, well, you know what? We were wrong. Just come back. Just come back and hang out. Like, how would you react? What would you think?
Oh, man. Lunch would not be a good time. I'll say that. That would not be a fun lunch.
Right?
No, yeah, you're right. And especially in the game of basketball where, you know, for lack of a better analogy, you know, some players really do see it out there as like a band of brothers. They do see it out like a game is like a war of some sort. So you have to be selfless in the game itself, you know, to make better plays for your teammates and to just kind of have a just general sort of, I don't know, just some sort of rhythm on the court. And then to kind of be thrusted back into the lineup after something like that, where it's like, not necessarily do I not trust some of the guys on the team, but you know that there's, you know, probably pockets of guys on the team that feel one way, and then coaching staff obviously feels a certain way. So I think that would be really difficult to sort of, you know, go out there and kind of lay it out on the line, knowing that there's all these types of sort of rumors and just discrepancies, just like what you just said about staying home or not staying home and all that kind of stuff. I think that would be really difficult to kind of navigate, especially for someone who's, how old is he? 21,
I think. Yeah. You know, and
especially trying to stay like loyal to the team at that point in time and trying to win games for a team that's looking to trade you very publicly as well.
Yeah. And to his credit, man, he came out and he hasn't complained about this at all. He hasn't done anything wrong. He came out tonight and he played his butt off, and he's still bad at defense. But, I mean, that's who he is, you know? He came out and played. And to the organization's credit, or at least to Brett Brown's credit, he's very open with his guys, and he really keeps the locker room together. I can't imagine another organization where they would have this happen and then the guy come back and be like, oh, it's fine. We're still all friends and stuff. So you got to give Brett Brown a lot of credit there. But yeah, Jahlil Okafor, man, I feel terrible for him. And like, I really wish that they would just trade him at this point. You know, and you were asking about Nerlens Noel, like a couple months ago, Nerlens Noel was really unhappy with he wasn't getting playing time. He came out and said there's too many centers on the team. And he sort of went about it, you know, he was pretty vocal about it, and he didn't go about it the greatest way. And he complained to the media, and then he was injured, and he wasn't even with the team. He went down south to get rehab and stuff. And it was just seeming like he was handling it really, really poorly. His play on the court, I think, has changed all that. He came back and started playing again, and they realized that, like, listen, this guy's obviously a way better fit for this team. But talk about, like, two polar opposites. If you could put Jahlil Okafor's attitude in Nerlens Noel that entire time, like, it would be, you know, that's exactly what you want out of any teammate. And don't get me wrong, I love Nerlens Noel, and I think he had every reason to gripe. But, you know, Jahlil has handled himself perfectly through this whole thing, and it makes you really, like, if they want to get people feeling bad for him, and, you know, you've done a good job. I don't know if it does anything for his trade value, but
yeah.
So if he were to get traded, which it's likely at this point that, well, it's kind of looking that way, that he's going
to
get flipped
for
someone.
For sure.
Yeah. Who would you, obviously, Drew Holiday has been rumored to be the trade that they're looking for. Who would you like to see them kind of swap him for? And, you know, who do you think would your team is looking for and would help the Sixers out at this point?
You know, it's weird. At this point, I don't know what you would get in return for him. You're definitely not going to get, like, the market's not there for him. Like, the league is saturated with big men who only do one thing. Like, either they play defense or they play offense. There's only a few that do both, right? And everybody's kind of filled up at the center position, so I don't know what they could get back from. They're definitely not going to get their third overall pick back for him.
No.
And I love Drew Holiday. I mean, I've been welcoming him back in a heartbeat. I don't know what – I mean, he would be fine. He would be a definite upgrade, and he's actually Drew Holiday's a lot better than people give him credit for. He's just been injured so often lately. But they're not going to – I don't think they're going to get Drew Holiday for Okafor. That doesn't make any sense. That trade, I don't think, makes any sense for the Pelicans. But honestly –
unless Drew Holiday made some sort of, like, made it known that he didn't want to re-sign there because he's going to be a free agent. But that's also something that if you're Philly, you still – at the end of the day, you still have to think about Jahlil Okafor. Like, he was our third overall pick a couple of seasons ago. While he might not be a perfect fit, and while he might be, you know, his style of play might be sort of dinosaur-like, where you just have an offensive center that gets buckets and can't defend the rim whatsoever, you know, even though that's your player and that's the mold that he is, he was still the third overall pick, and just to swap him for a loner for what, not even a third of, like a third of the season that we have left in this season, not knowing if Drew Holiday is going to be a guy that resigns with you, that would be a difficult pill to swallow, and not something that, you know, I don't think Philly would be looking for that. You know, they're not looking to just shed him for absolutely nothing, obviously.
Right. And therein lies the problem. And I think it's not even – I think it's Brian Colangelo. He doesn't want to be the GM who came in after Hinkie and gave up the third overall pick for nothing. And I think that's a lot of the problem. I think he's trying to drive his value up, but it's not working. And, like, there's not a market for him, really. I honestly, at this point, I wish they would trade him for a bag of beans, to be honest. More at this point for Jahlil Okafor's, you know, for his sake, because he's in a terrible position for him. Like it's they're killing his value. I mean, he doesn't fit on this team. I hate watching him play anyway. I think he's a really nice, I think he's a nice kid, but I don't know him personally, but like, you know, he made some bonehead mistakes when he first got in the league. He had that speeding ticket and he had those fights, you know,
in Boston. You know, I know the streets that he was walking.
You were in that fight, weren't you? I thought I recognized you.
No, I was the one like chanting "World Star" in the background. That was me.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, but like, whatever. That's all forgivable. Like we've all made really dumb mistakes when we were 20 years old.
We've all fought multiple people in the streets of Boston at least once in our lives.
Oh yeah, totally. But no,
I know you're right.
At this point, give them away. It doesn't matter. They have to do something, because the longer they hold on to them, it's killing Jahlil's value around the league, and it's also hurting the team. So,
and I think one thing to note about Jahlil Okafor that you're saying about his trade value. There's been a center that is literally Jahlil Okafor, like 2.0, that's had a very productive career so far, that's been on the trade market for two seasons, in Nikola Vucevic from Orlando. They've been trying to move him for, you know, we've been hearing about that since last season, and it's still very strong that they've been fielding options for him this whole time, and he's the kind of guy that's very much like Jahlil Okafor, back to the basket. You know, he might get you 20 and 10, mm-hmm. but he can't defend the rim, and he's more of a defensive liability. I'm not sure what his plus minus is like overall, but it can't be good. Well, A, Orlando's garbage.
Yeah.
But still, that's the point. You know, that if you're already seeing what the market's saying about these players, and it's not strong.
Yeah.
So,
also, well, I just want to point out that he was also drafted by the Sixers, Vucevic.
Man, centers.
I know. What's going on?
Wait, when was, what was the, this escapes my memory. What was that move? What happened? How did he get to Orlando?
Oh, so the Sixers drafted him, and then they traded for, God, don't, I forget. It doesn't matter.
Oh, in the trade though? Was it?
No,
like,
no, they had him for a year. He Doug Collins coached him for a year and a half, and then they traded him for the Bynum trade. He got switched in the Bynum trade.
What were your thoughts on Bynum's hair in Philly? Like when he hair... like did like the weird thing when it just kind of like, I don't know what he was doing with it. He kind of like looks like, I don't know what that was.
His hair was
he kind of had a perm.
His hair was the best part of him. That's the only thing I'll remember about Bynum. That and bowling.
I just remember his suits. Like he had like the big like red suits kind of, and they were like kind of maroon looking a little bit. Then he had like the hair to go with it. It was
you know,
it was a great tenure in Philly.
It was great. It was amazing. He set the franchise back for you. Actually, I shouldn't even say that. I do love Bynum because he brought in Sam Hinkie. That's all I'm going to say. They made a sea change after that, and they're like, you know what? They just gambled on everything trying to get him in, and it got him to, you know, flip everything. Basically, they were a middling team for 20 years and doing nothing, and you know, new ownership, whatever. Listen, this is going nowhere.
Sure.
So is Sam Hinkie, is he working right now, or is he just kind of hanging out?
He's hanging out.
Memoirs.
I'm pretty. Yeah,
he's gonna get a job offer here pretty soon. I would imagine
he's gonna be back.
Inside the Cylinder is hiring. We need a producer.
Staff. We'll take him.
There you go.
All right. So moving on. We got another question. And this is kind of like something that you had asked me when I came on your pod. But so you're a Philly fan in you live in Brooklyn for people that don't know. So in the same division, do you have any like away game experiences? Are you only a Philadelphia Sixers fan? Are you like a Phillies fan? Do you have any like weird sort of things that happen in New York where, I don't know, someone puking next to you or trying to fight or something that would happen only in away games?
Well, oh man. I don't even know if I should talk about this. All right, so to answer the first part of your question, I am a Sixers fan and I'm a Steelers fan because that's a long story, but, you know, I'm not an Eagles. I mean, I'm an okay Eagles fan, whatever. But I'm also, you know, I like to try and follow the Knicks and the Nets a little bit tangentially because I'm here and they're here and, like, you know, whatever. But a couple years ago when the All-Star game was in Brooklyn, a friend of mine used to work for the NBA, and she got us tickets. She got us tickets for the D-League All-Star game, right?
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome until I got really wasted afterwards and ended up almost passing out in the middle of the street, in the middle of Brooklyn. Like, I'm like 2 miles from my apartment. I had no idea how to get home. I was so wasted. I called my wife. It was, by the way, it was like 1 degree out that night. So you want to talk about drunken idiots? I was one. I called my wife and I'm like, and by the way, it's only like midnight. And I'm like that wasted. I called her. I'm like, babe, I'm just going to go to sleep on the ground. She's like, you're going to die. Get in the car. So here I am, luckily.
Get in the car or get ran over by a car. I think I heard about that D-League All-Star game. Wasn't Jordan McRae fighting people in like the streets? Like, for you, maybe a victim of like a Jordan McRae, like left hook or something like that?
I have no idea what happened. All I know was they were serving really strong beers. And then the bar we went to afterwards was serving a whole lot more. So
that sounds magical, and I don't know, I wish I was there for you at that time.
Me too. I wish somebody would have stayed with me. Put me in that car. Anyway, does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, that definitely answers that. That's next level. So no, that's good content right there.
Feel free to edit that out.
So another question, just another Philly question. So it looks like Ben Simmons, I actually saw today that, Philly's coach, Brown said, that he would like to see Ben Simmons get back to the lineup. But at the end of the day, it is up to the general manager, or just, you know, the front office, whether or not he's going to play, coupling to that. So by the sounds of it, it does sound like he's had some workouts, but they've been pretty light. So I guess the question is for you, as a Philadelphia fan, what are your thoughts on Ben Simmons? Do you want to see him suit up this year? Do you want to see them just hold off till next season? I guess, what does that look like?
Well, okay, so the fan in me obviously wants to see him play. Like, I saw him in Summer League, and he looked amazing. Like, way better than I expected him to look. even defensively, in the Summer League, he looks so much better than I expected. The fan in me obviously wants him to play, wants him to suit up and get out there and play with Embiid. But from what I understand, like, you know, Brett Brown did come out and say today he's definitely going to play this year. I just don't know, like, if you're going to hold him out until, like, mid-March, what's the sense? Like, maybe you want to get him a run, but, like, at that point, you're just – and listen, the award I'm about to talk about doesn't really mean anything in the scheme of things, but you're just damaging his chances as a rookie of the year next year. Like, I mean, what's the sense? It'd be great for the fans to be able to get to watch him play. I think that's awesome. But if he's really that far behind and we haven't heard that much about him, I'm not happy with the front office right now for being so silent about his injury and where he's at. They've given us no updates. I'm a little bit, you know, I want to hear more about that.
Sure.
I'm a little bit concerned that maybe he re-injured himself or something. You know, that Brett Brown came out today and said he's going to play this year is encouraging. But honestly, I just want them to be honest. Like, if he's injured, hold him out. Don't do anything stupid. Like, for the sake of the fans, like, we all want to see him play. Yeah, but like, we want to see him have a career more. I definitely want to see him and Embiid play together. But again, like, there's next year. They're not going anywhere this year. You know, I mean, like, I love, even without Embiid and Ben Simmons playing right now, they're still 21-34. Like, that's 21 wins. That's the most wins they've had by far in a season in 3 years. I'm happy. I'm happy as a clam. Like,
no,
it's cool.
And I think part of that kind of goes into it is they've been playing so much better, and with Embiid, just in general, you've seen a lot of good stuff out of Philly. You've just seen good fight out of, you know, TJ McConnell, and Covington seems like he's been playing a lot better than he was playing in the beginning of the season.
Oh my God.
And it looks like the crowd they're showing up. So in a money sort of standpoint, it's like, what do we got to rush these guys in for? We'll make a little bit of cash this year. And then next year we just run the whole team back. Now, one thing that you did say was about, you know, they're kind of in secrecy a little bit about where Ben Simmons is at. You know, it's kind of, you know, I guess you can say that, you know, there's a shade over what it is that's happening with him. Now, on the same side of that, I guess, with Embiid, it looks like he has like a slight, I don't know if it's a meniscus tear or if it's a slight tear in his knee. And they kind of were shady about that as well. So I guess, you know, and it sounds like they would be bringing Embiid back this season too. So, you know, I guess my question would be, yes, you know, Embiid is, you know, Embiid is resting right now. He's not going to be playing in the Rising Stars Challenge. Simmons is obviously resting. We haven't seen him. Haven't even heard a peep out of his situation, whether or not he's going to go or not until this week, it seems like. So when, let's say there's something like a little, you know, a little nick next season, right in the beginning of the season. When does this team actually, is it next season that the Philadelphia 76ers try to make the playoffs? Is that the year where it's like, all right, now we have a team and now we can actually kind of put it out there? Or when do you actually start to kind of, you know, utilize the process and have it become something more so than just a process?
Well, I think based on what we're seeing this year so far, with Robert Covington's growth and TJ McConnell, I mean, they're obviously going to, I think they'll have a different starting point guard next year, but having TJ come off the bench is going to be huge. I think based on what we're seeing this year and the progress they've made and how well they're playing together, how scrappy of a team they are, I think they absolutely should be shooting for the playoffs next year. If you get a healthy Joel Embiid in his second season, and you get Ben Simmons coming back healthy, like it's going to be his rookie year, right? Even if he plays like the last 10 games of the season, next year is going to be his rookie season.
Sure.
He's going to go through that learning curve. And Joel Embiid is going to be, I mean, he's already been a transcendent player so far this season. He's going to be coming into his second season. I just think like the sky's the limit, man. Like, push for the playoffs. If they're like this close right now with the team they have right now, they should be thinking about playoffs next year. Absolutely.
Especially in a weak Eastern Conference. I don't see any reason why they wouldn't.
Right, exactly. Like, I mean, who's, you know, there's so many mediocre teams in the East right now that, like, I mean, really, what you have is you have the Cavs, you have Washington, you have Toronto and Boston. And then it's up
everyone
for grabs.
Else.
Yeah. Yeah. No offense to the Pistons, but
no. I mean, a lot of those teams also, when you look at them, I guess I wouldn't put the Pistons in this category because they're still one of the younger teams in the league.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think Reggie Jackson's our oldest starter and he's 26 or 27. Everyone else is like 23 and under.
Marcus Morris is 27 as well.
Oh, okay. Marcus. Yeah, you're right. Marcus Morris. Sorry. But our main guys are younger. Andre Drummond, obviously, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Tobias Harris, Stanley Johnson. Anyways, a lot of those other teams that we're talking about in the Eastern Conference are kind of, you know, a lot of those teams are a bit older. You know, you look at Atlanta, like, they got some old dudes on that team. You look at Indianapolis, you know, they have some old dudes on that team. Chicago, they're like a weird mixture of super young and some old dudes. So, like, Philly's kind of actually like a perfect setting right now where they're just like, hey, we might be coming up and being dominant right at the time where, you know, King LeBron starts taking a step back and everyone says, you know, I've heard when LeBron digresses, he might just be a freak. He might never digress, but or not digress, sorry. But he might never decline in
right.
his play.
He might just stop.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just, but no, I think that's something that bodes well for Philadelphia going forward is that they are just so young and growing and they're just kind of becoming like a solid unit, which is great for next season and moving forward from there.
Yeah, for sure. And then you add in they have a chance of getting the Lakers pick and they have, you know, their pick is probably going to be maybe 10 right now, which is still good. And they have the Kings pick swap. So if the Kings finish worse than them and it's inside, I think it might be top 10 protected, I'm not sure. But they get to swap picks. Whoever has the better pick, they get to take, you know, either their pick or the King's pick, whichever is better. I'm not sure about the protection on that, but I should know this. But anyway, it's what I get for following the entire league and not just the Sixers.
No, but that makes sense. Yeah, they have picks coming up too. So, and it does sound like they are going to get that LA pick. LA's been stinking it up.
It's top three protected, and they've done a magical job of tanking since the beginning of the season. So, yeah, so I don't know. There's like, I saw some statistic where it was like between the Sixers pick and the Lakers pick, they have like a 50-50 chance of getting like a top three pick or something this year. I don't know. But you add that pick in with Ben Simmons and Embiid, and listen, Sarge is playing incredible the last couple of games. I mean, they've got some young, really good talent on this roster, and it's exciting. It's exciting times. And I was saying, I think it was when I had Derek Bodner on, I was talking to him about the Sixers, and I was talking about, like, for me, in a weird way, and I've always sort of felt like this, when you're watching your team grow and get good, it's almost more exciting than watching them win a championship. A different way, but it's really exciting.
And when that team goes and actually then wins a championship, a la Detroit Pistons 2004, mm-hmm. you know, like that is literally just a climactic experience of, you know, just next level proportions. So.
Break out the tissues, man.
For sure. So moving on. So we are going to talk a little Pistons here for everyone that's wondering why we're only talking Philly, but we got a Philly guy on. So we're going to talk some Philly. We've talked a lot of Pistons, obviously, since this is a Pistons podcast. But anyways, Joe, you had a trivia question, I think, that you wanted to hit Joe with.
A quick Sixers trivia question, because I didn't know this, and I looked it up. There were probably three or four guys I would have guessed who would have been the answer to this question.
Just so you know, but, I'm terrible at trivia, but go ahead.
it's basic, though. So the question is, who's the 76ers' all-time leading scorer?
Oh, my God. That one you
would think. It's tricky.
Let's see. Would it be... this is terrible. This is going to make for bad podcast here. I want to say Allen Iverson, but I know it's not Allen Iverson.
Let me take a crack.
What you got?
All right. I'm going to go with,
you think of all the good players they've had, Moses Malone, mm-hmm. You know, Wilt played there for just a little while. Dr. J, Charles Barkley. I mean, they've had a lot of guys.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, it's none of those guys.
I know. I know. It's
Derek Coleman.
Eric Snow. Hal Greer is the answer to that question.
Oh, there you go. All right.
Allen Iverson's number two. I guess, you know, they kind of traded him not early in his career, but what was he, like 32, you know?
I think someone in there.
So I guess it was kind of a longevity thing. Just Hal Greer played a bit longer than Mr. AI or any of those other guys, and he's the all-time leading scorer for him.
Give me another one.
Back there.
Give me another one that's more recent. Maybe I can answer that one.
Ooh, I don't know if I have anything more recent.
We'll come back to
it. David, you got anything?
Sorry, I'm trying to think of something.
Don't worry about it.
I got nothing. Something will come to mind. I'll shoot one more at you before we're done here.
All right, let's talk Pistons.
Well, before we did, Joe, you had a question. Joey, you had a question for Joe.
Yeah. So taking a look here, the 76ers were the first team in the NBA to agree or to basically settle on a partnership with an advertiser to put advertisements on jerseys, which will debut in 2017-2018. The advertiser is going to be StubHub.
StubHub, yeah.
So that's happening. It's been talked about for a while. Just kind of wanted to, you know, pick your brain a little bit. What are your thoughts on the jersey ads? Do you think it's going to sort of, you know, take away from the game a little bit? Do you think it's going to affect the viewership? They're not selling them to fans, so the advertisements won't be on jerseys that fans buy. It's just on what, you know, the players are wearing. But is the NBA kind of selling out here?
First of all, I didn't know that the fans won't be able to buy those. Second of all, like, you know, so I've gone back and forth in my head about this. Like, you know, you want it to be, as a purist, you want it to be a pure sport. You want it to be for the love of the game, for the glory of the city, for all that horse crap, right? And then and then you look at, like, the European football leagues, and they're all named after their sponsor. Like, they don't have a nickname like we do. They're like, I don't know. I don't really watch football. Do you guys watch soccer? Soccer.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Nothing crazy.
But aren't they, like, isn't there, like, a Mexican Bimbo, you know, that brand Bimbo or whatever it is?
Like, I mean, in the U.S., like, the New York Red Bulls,
you know, that's
a team. Like, that's a literal team for – I mean, they usually do have name. Yeah, I guess you're right, because
I think they're, actually
just named after club. They're not named after – they don't have, like – a lot of those teams don't have a secondary, like, the Boston Celtics. The Manchester, you know, United, they're – you know, Liverpool. They're not like the Liverpool Dragons or something
like that. Right, exactly.
But, so they're recognized by the advertisements on their jerseys.
Right.
You're right. Yeah. I mean, I think when I think Manchester United, I think Chevrolet. That's weird. But that's what I think. That's what's on their chest.
Yeah, exactly. And people don't have a problem buying those jerseys. Like, it's, I was going to say, to sum it up really quickly, I care less about this issue than I do about the All-Star game. That's all.
Yeah, fair. Yeah.
It's fine. I think it's getting blown out of proportion. I don't think it's that big of a deal. Like, if you're going to be able to create revenue for your sport and do better things for the league and get more sponsorships, which enables people to see the game more widely all over the world, and, like, enables you to pay the players, the best players in the world, more money so that you can get them to your teams, whatever it enables, that's fine. I don't have a problem with it. Like, you know, I do want to still be able to call my team the Sixers, just because, you know, we have this ingrained in us.
Not the Whoppers,
because I don't eat Whoppers. but look at it. It's fine. Like, it's a tiny little thing on their shirt. Like, it's whatever. It's
And the NBA is not going too crazy with it. They're just putting it, like, on the shoulder area.
It's discreet-ish. So they're not going to be.
Do you remember when the Major League Baseball came out with the Spider-Man bases? It was when I think it was Spider-Man 3 was coming out, and they put they made their infield bases.
See, now
Spider-Man,
that's shameful.
It was so bad that they just didn't do it anymore. Like, they were toying around with the idea, and it was just ridiculous.
That's just next level. Just
I don't even know what to say.
There, just force feeding it. So before we get into the Pistons, I just wanted to do, or just to give you a quick word from one of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network's newest sponsors.
Today's sponsor of the Super Flake Podcast is Handy.com, where you can get a professional handy person for any household job you need. If you want to move your apartment, go to Handy right now. You can find a professional moving team easily. What's that? Your electric doesn't work? Listen, go to Handy.com. They'll come over right away and they'll help you. Oh, I'm sorry. Your toilet's clogged? It's kind of gross, but go to Handy. They got you covered there too, and they're not going to judge you like I just did. Or even if you just have gross roommates and you need your apartment cleaned, listen, go to Handy. They'll help you out. Just go to Handy now, Handy.com, download the Handy app, and you can have a professional service person or handy person in minutes. It's fast. It's friendly. They're guaranteed to be professional, and they'll do any job that you need done. So if you go there now and you type in promo code ALMIGHTY50, you can get 50% off cleaning services. Or if you type in ALMIGHTY15, you can get 15% off of any electrical, plumbing, or handyman services. So go to Handy.com now, download the free app, and take advantage of this great, wonderful site. Okay, now back to your show.
Moving on to the next topic for the now we're finally talking Pistons. In case you have not seen what's going on in the interwebs, Zach Lowe, the ESPN's, you know, main basketball writer, just kind of basketball savant, just, I don't know, everyone's favorite podcaster, wrote a pretty big expose about the Detroit Pistons. He spent some time in Detroit kind of looking. I mean, he's been one of the guys that was pretty vocal about the Pistons being a top four Eastern Conference team going into the season, top four, top five team. Obviously, that hasn't been the case so far this year, if you followed this team at all. I believe Detroit's sitting right at the 8th seed right now, maybe a game and a half up in that regards, but also right there next to the seven seed in Chicago. Now, Detroit just won tonight going into the All-Star break. They did not suffocate a 27 or 28-point lead and beat the Mavericks at home. Reggie Jackson had a pretty solid performance. I believe he had 24 points on over 50% from the floor. Really, really solid performance out of Reggie. But he was really kind of one of the more polarizing figures in the piece. And he's been one of the more polarizing players, period, for this entire season. It's been Reggie trade rumors. It's been his Smith should start over Reggie. It's been, you know, who's our point guard for the future kind of conversations. So I just wanted to kind of quickly just jump into the article and or not into the article, but just kind of some talking points from it. Now, Joey and myself had chatted a little bit earlier about this today and would love to kind of get your thoughts on this, Joe. Did you have a chance to read the article at all?
Yeah, I did. It was a really good article.
It was great, yeah, and it's kind of, you know, it was great in the sense that I kind of wanted to cry during it. Like, don't tell me stuff that I kind of know. Like, I know that things are going bad, and I know that they might just blow everything up. And we were that feisty 8 seed last season, you know, really sticking it to the Cavs before inevitably getting swept. But anyways, yeah, you know, one thing that came out of the piece was Reggie Jackson has always been a polarizing figure on his team going back to his days in Oklahoma City. When he was getting the start over Russell Westbrook, he would write on his shoes SPG for starting point guard and HOF for Hall of Famer. Now, that was something that, you know, between Joey Mack and myself, I was like, you know what? Honestly, I love that stuff. Like, I love that Mamba spirit that Reggie Jackson has inside of him. I love that he thinks he's the best player on the floor, because I think you need that in the NBA. Joey, you had some different thoughts about that. And if that pertains to what you feel about, you know, this season and Reggie Jackson in totality, I know we haven't really talked or done too much prep about this topic going into this conversation right now, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah, you're asking me, right?
Yeah, I'm asking you, Joey.
I mean, I think the article is really revealing. I mean, kind of like what you said, like he exposed things that we already knew and just kind of broke them down to another level, specifically kind of focusing on Reggie Jackson and Andre Drummond. And, you know, you and I went back and forth a little bit on this. Reggie Jackson hasn't traditionally been very liked by his teammates, specifically in Oklahoma City. He has a terrible relationship with that organization, with the players. Who knows exactly really what's going on there, but he burned a lot of bridges. I think he's been relatively immature kind of interacting with those guys in that franchise in general, and he's had issues with players on his team currently. Now, like players motivating themselves, having a Mamba mentality, I completely agree with that. You know, if he wrote, you know, starting point guard on his, like, on a poster on his wall, or it was his wallpaper on his phone, I get that. But if you're trying to, if you're doing that and the starting point guard on your team sees that, that's just not good for chemistry. It's not a good being a good teammate, in my opinion. And I think players are going to take issue with that. And I think the knock on Reggie is his attitude. And I think that Zach Lowe touched on that in a couple different points in the article. And the problem with that is that right now his game has dropped off a couple notches since his injury. So when he came back from injury, he was trying to kind of be the Reggie of last year, and he's not really that. So he has to kind of swallow that pill and adjust his game a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, it's an adjustment that I think he needs to make, and I think he's kind of accepting that at least for the time period, or for the time being right now, in order to win games. Maybe that if he gets healthier in the offseason, that'll change. But I just think he needs an attitude check a little bit. And you're right. It has allowed him to be a pretty successful point guard, at least last year. But I don't think it's the mentality that this team needs in order to win a championship, personally.
Joe, do you have any thoughts about, you know, that type of mentality in a player? Would you like to see that out of your starting point guard, out of someone? So I guess just to break it down quickly, Reggie Jackson is a starting point guard in this league, and he was a backup point guard because Russell Westbrook was a starting point guard. So he is a starting point guard in this league, maybe not on all teams, but on a significant amount of teams, he would be a starter. What are your thoughts if there was a player, even, you know, on the Sixers or just a team that you're fond of, or just any team, honestly, that you follow that had that kind of mentality?
Well, I mean, I've watched him play, you know, I've watched him play quite a bit. Honestly, when he left Oklahoma City, they were fine to let him go. I mean, it didn't seem like his teammates cared one bit. In fact, I think they were eager to get him, you know, out the door. I mean, I think that has part to do with Russell Westbrook being, boy, Russell Westbrook is hard to say sometimes. I think that has part to do with Russell Westbrook being, you know, such the alpha dog, as they say. And, you know, he even, for all intents and purposes, drove KD out of town too, you know. But, you know, I think that it's weird. Like, I have a weird sort of feeling about, like, I get, as you're saying, I get putting the stuff on your shoes. So, David, you were saying putting it on your shoes, you want him to have that sort of that mentality that he is the best, that he is going to
chip
be
on his shoulder.
Yeah, chip on his shoulder. And, Joey, you were saying that, like, yeah, I like your point about if you're going to do it privately and, like, you know, you both have really good points. I'm trying to walk the middle ground here. If he was on my team...
No, don't walk it. Don't walk it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would side more with Joey on this one. If he was on my team, and like... It just seems like that's a sort of a me thing, and I like guys that play us. You know what I mean? And I understand you want to be a starting point guard. You feel like you're good enough. You wanted to get off Oklahoma City because you're never getting starting minutes over Westbrook. You're just not. So I get that he was maybe even like sort of subliminally, you know, casting stones, like, I need to be out of here, you know, maybe making waves with people, maybe not so subtly, to get out, to get your own team. And I think everybody was pretty aware of that. Honestly, for me, I've always felt that he's a little bit overrated. I don't think he's as good as his I don't want to say attitude, but his belief in himself. And like, obviously, Zach Lowe's article touched on the points like that he's been injured and he has definitely not been himself. He can't cut like he used to. He can't come off of screens and get to the rim. And that was that was the strength of his game, his athleticism, being able to crawl off a screen and get to the rim and kick out. And now he can't do that. And he's not a good shooter from outside. So his game is severely limited. He's still not coming back. And yeah, and I think it's going to be a bit of a reality check for him. And I think he needs to kind of fall in line. But also that article, and I'm curious about what you guys think about, you know, how Zach Lowe touched on like the pick and roll offense versus like a motion offense, and like where they're sort of stuck in between two worlds right now. And so that's not just affecting him. So like a large part of it is, it's kind of his fault, but he's also injured. But a large part of it seems like they don't really know what they want to do with his offense right now. Maybe these guys really don't fit together.
I think that there's something definitely to that. Now, Joey and I actually did talk about this a little bit. Reggie Jackson is a pick and roll point guard. Stan Van Gundy's vision for this team was heavy pick and roll with Andre Drummond and Reggie Jackson. They didn't just get Reggie Jackson because he was a starting level point guard. They got him because he was running the system that Stan Van Gundy wanted him to run. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something where if that's what you're putting forth as your, you know, blueprint, start, you know, pick and roll being your primary play on offense, and then, you know, see what you can do with floor spacers out there on the wings, and either get the penetration with the guard or get the penetration and get a shot to an easier shot for Andre Drummond. And if it's not there, kick out once D collapses to guys sitting out there on the wings, then that's what you're going to run, because that's what the coach wants to run. Now, what we've been seeing so far this season is that, you know, that's not Ish Smith's best game. Ish Smith is awesome at pushing pace and, you know, kind of getting that motion started. He's a motion guy himself. So, mm-hmm. So it really has been kind of not like a Jekyll and, you know, in Mr. Hyde type of scenario, but you really do see kind of two teams on the floor depending on which point guard is playing. Now, I'm more so just in the camp that since Stan Van Gundy, the GM of this team for all intents and purposes, you know, the president of basketball operations, he's the one making the final calls on players. He's the one making final calls on plays. since he's the one that wants to run that type of system. And, you know, and part of that is, you know, with Reggie Jackson's knee is getting him back into shape and him actually playing basketball, then that's a system that you got to run, even if Ish Smith might be more of like the flavor of the month and he's got the team playing pretty good basketball. I don't think you necessarily ditch your philosophy as a coach and as an organization with the players that you've acquired to sort of make that the system that you're going to run. And just because it's been working to an extent of, you know, two games over 500 instead of three games under 500. It's not like they're on fire with that, you know, system in general. So that would be my point, is that Stan Van Gundy is the one who set this whole team up, and that's the system that he wanted to have run. So I would prefer that to be the system, because that's what our leader in charge wants it to be.
We heavily relied on the pick and roll at the beginning of last year for sure. I think he wanted somebody to run the pick and roll with Andre Drummond, so it could be kind of like a Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan spread the floor offense for sure. I think that sometimes there's issues specifically probably with Andre Drummond actually setting a hard pick and rolling hard to the rim. So it's not necessarily even a Reggie Jackson thing, although he has lost a step for sure this year. But I think there's kind of issues with Andre playing his role as well as he can there. And then I think I think we do need to run the pick and roll for sure. That's Reggie's game.
That also helps out Andre Drummond. I think that's where you get the most out of Andre Drummond, is out of a pick and roll as well.
Yeah, rolling.
He's
the rim
better in that system. He's better as a rim runner, and you know he's so dominant. He can just jump so high. He's so much more athletic, and he can adjust his body midair that no guys in the NBA other than a DeAndre Jordan can do that. So those are two of your main guys that run that system. So sorry, Joe, go ahead. Didn't mean to cut you off there.
Which Joe?
Joey. Joey.
You know, so you do have to run plays for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Some of these plays are pretty lousy. Part of the whole problem here really with their offense is the lack of ball movement that the Pistons just have kind of in general, and that affects an offense. Like, how do you improvise? You know, a lot of like – the Warriors offense isn't like, I mean, they run really, really good plays, but they are also making extra passes and finding guys. And like, if you run the pick and roll and Reggie gets into the lane and splits the D, and then you find Marcus in the corner, and then he finds a dude on the elbow, and then, like, you just get the defense out of the position, you're kind of improvising an offense based on getting like the defense out of position. You know, the San Antonio Spurs do this, and you know, we've seen the Hawks do it a little bit in the past as well. So I think
the Clippers do it, who run the pick and roll.
Exactly. So I think the offense really, you know, you start with a set play, you run the pick and roll, or you run that kind of play where Kentavious Caldwell-Pope comes off these screens. I think you can improve those, tweak those plays maybe a little bit, but I think it's also on the players to get the most out of those plays. And a lot of that has to do with moving the ball and, you know, kind of finding guys and getting yourself in position that helps your team score as well. So it's kind of it is one of those two-way streets. But I think Zach Lowe makes – well, another thing that Zach Lowe said in that podcast was he questioned our team's IQ. He did. Like, how intuitive are these guys out there? And sometimes you can watch them, and it's true. Like, does – Andre specifically on defense, I don't need to go there, but like, does he really have the instincts? Like, on offense, do our guys have the instincts to make the right play at the right time? I think we've seen a little bit of that out of Stanley Johnson. But you know, it's
he said that about Kentavious Caldwell-Pope specifically. You know, once he gets stopped, once he doesn't get the shot off, he doesn't have a dynamic pass coming after that. What he has is like the easy dump off. And that's one thing that's been really frustrating with watching the Pistons, is that when one thing doesn't work, it just seems like the player stops where they're at, like they're in quicksand, and then they just try to reset the play like it's a damn college game. And it's just like, all right, now let's run another set. And then it's just the most predictable, slow offense.
I think part of that is that, like Zach outlined in his piece, is that, you know, Stan is calling every single play for these guys. He experimented, I guess, with letting Reggie Jackson, you know, call the plays during the sets. And he quickly went away from it, and now he goes to every single play. He's calling for the guys. Like, every time they come out of a timeout or, whatever, obviously he's going to call a play then. But every time they're back on offense, he's making sure that he's calling the play for the guys. They're not allowed to improvise. They're not allowed to use their own skills, and they're obviously not learning how to share and pass the ball because of this. I mean, sure. maybe that's built into the play, but I think some part of learning how to play the game is failing at it and is experimenting and like getting creative. God, the best guys in the league are the most creative, right? Like LeBron James. Did you see that pass he made through
ridiculous
the nutmeg? That was ridiculous.
Yeah, the nutmegs. Ridiculous. The legs of give me his name quick, real quick.
Andrew Wiggins.
Thank you, Andrew Wiggins. Right through the legs of Andrew Wiggins for that layup. It was crazy. Like, it's incredible. Like that's not a planned play. Nobody could plan that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And one thing that Zach Lowe also said, and this was just in a tweet during the Pistons recently, were down by 16 points going into the fourth quarter at Toronto, where we always get our butts whipped, and they found a way to win. And one thing that he said is that Detroit's really good in chaos. Like, they're good when plays kind of just start to deteriorate a little bit, and then that's when they start naturally starting finding guys that start kicking the ball and, you know, kind of moving it around the circle, or moving it around the arc, the three-point arc. And that's really when you really start to see some of the best out of them. You know, let's say that, you know, D starts collapsing or something, then you get to see guys like Tobias, Marcus Morris, and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope pull up just a short little two-pointer when they're wide open. Like, you really kind of see the best out of them when they are flowing a little bit. And I actually tweeted about this a couple months ago. Watching the Pistons, I was like, this is – Stan Van Gundy's the one coach, or this Detroit Pistons team is the one team that reminds – and I do not like watching college basketball. It was the one team that reminded me of a college basketball team. It's like every single play is being drawn up. Every single play, it's like, we're running our set because this is what we do at Syracuse basketball. It's like, this is the identity that we have. It's like, what the hell are we doing? Like, don't you have play?
I think that's a major dynamic that Ish Smith kind of brings to the team, is his ability to – because Reggie Jackson doesn't really push the ball up the floor and run a fast break and find guys out of position. Ish Smith kind of does kind of improvises a lot. And he'll get the ball and he'll race up the court, see if he can beat the other team's defense. And then what he does is improvises the offense from there. He'll find guys trailing for three-pointers or find a dude in the corner. Sometimes he's just so fast. The defense will still be on the other side of the floor, but they haven't turned around. He can just beat him down the floor.
Well, the big man gets lost sometimes, and then all of a sudden, right before you know it, Ish Smith is at the rim, and the big man's like finally turning around and seeing that Ish Smith is putting up a layup.
You guys are speaking my language, man. I love Ish Smith.
I know. Joe told me in the beginning of the season, like, come back and tell me how much you love Ish Smith.
Did I tell you?
He's been great.
He can't be your starting point guard. He just doesn't have a shot. If he had a 3-point shot, man, a consistent 3-point shot, he'd be gold. But
exactly.
Yeah.
We don't need to trade for Ricky Rubio if we have Ish Smith. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, like, you can keep it moving with Ish Smith and then pick up a point guard in the draft. That's the kind of direction you need to go in.
He's so crafty. His handle is so good. He just like whips in and out of traffic, like down around the rim. It's ridiculous. He's that's the kind of improvisation. Thank you. That I'm talking about. Thanks.
No, I agree. And even to your point, Joey, with Reggie Jackson, even when he is running the fast break, he's still doing it very methodically, and he's kind of rocking into it. Like, he's kind of like doing
kind
it very
rigid.
Much in his own rhythm. I don't think it's necessarily rigid. He's a big guard, so
it's a little more herky jerky, where Ish is a little more fluid.
He's not as reckless. I'll just say that he's not as reckless as Ish Smith, and I'm not saying that that's a bad thing about Ish Smith that he's reckless. I'm just saying that Reggie Jackson's a bit more methodical, and even in a fast break, it's a slower fast break.
Well, here's a question for you guys. Like, at this point, do you think Reggie Jackson's 100%, and do you think he's going to get better, or do you think this is kind of like, is this the new Reggie?
My major concern with him is the knee. I think the knee, it's a chronic tendonitis that he has in that knee. Like, he's even said he's had it since his college days at Boston College, and I think it's a major problem, because we just haven't seen the explosiveness that we've seen last year. I've seen him limping several times, like just randomly throughout games. Not like take me out of the game, just like I just kind of see him. It's just gingerly walking on that knee. I think it's a problem moving forward. I mean, I hope to see him recover from it, but I haven't seen the steps that I would need to see so far this year.
To kind of second that, no, in tonight's game against the Mavericks, Reggie Jackson in the end of the second quarter got his hands into a pass. He played great tonight, but he got his hands into a passing lane. He deflected it, and this was, you know, above the three-point line. So then it was a fast break, all Reggie. Reggie had it by himself, and he kind of tiptoed, like kind of like stutter step, so he like had his footing correct so he could do a jam. Did a two-handed jam, hung there for probably about a second or two, came down, and I thought he tore something. Like, he literally was like limping right after that, and then as soon as he went back down on the defensive side of the floor, he was waving at the coach saying like, pull me, like, I can't go right now. So then they pulled him, and apparently like he played the whole second half. He played heavy minutes in the second half, and he was fine. Actually tweeted at Rod Beard over there at Detroit News about that, and he hit me back on that, just to let me know that Reggie is good and he's going to be playing in the second half. But just that type of stuff, there's been so many times this season that you've seen just normal-looking plays or even semi-abnormal-looking plays where Reggie just comes up limping, and it's scary because it's like, man, it's a knee, you know? Knees are a scary thing to have a faulty, you know, ligament or faulty, you know, just to have tendonitis in there like that. Now, I don't necessarily think that this is the Reggie forever. This is, like Joey said, this is something that he's been battling for college. Now, that doesn't necessarily – and he had – I think Reggie Jackson played 79, 80 games last season, 18 points a game, 7 assists. So it might just be something that's ebbs and flows. I think we're going to know a lot more after the All-Star break, and he has a whole week off of no NBA basketball. I think that's going to be huge for Reggie, and we'll start to see. Because, honestly, there was that hiccup. There was that moment in tonight's game, but Reggie – played a hell of a game, and for me it was like he read the article and he committed to defense, and he, you know, only shot like, you know, 12 shots or something like that, and like I said, shot above 50%. He was like 7 for 10 or something like that. Maybe even better than that, but just a really overall solid game. So I'm hoping that that's the Reggie that I see moving forward, and that the rest will do wonders for him for the rest of the season, just even a week off. So that's all I got. You know, I don't know if there's any other closing thoughts or anything like that.
I'm good.
Yeah. Well,
not really.
Well, you know, I wanted to just thank you, Joe, for coming on. It was a pleasure having you on. I know that you're a little under the weather, so thank you for sticking through it and coming on so late with Inside the Cylinder. And you know, obviously wishing you all the best of luck over there at Superflight, and go, you know, give them a follow, give them a listen. But if you want to plug your stuff, Joe, please be my guest.
Sure. Thanks. Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it, because I've been so sick this week that I haven't done my own podcast, but thanks for getting me back into it. But yeah, you can follow Superflight podcast at, on Twitter at Superflight Pod, or just check it out on ABPN. It's fine. All that jazz.
Stitcher, iTunes, Superflight.
Everywhere.
Get your Superflight on. Get everywhere. and yeah, for us, you can follow, you know, Inside the Cylinder at iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, all that good stuff. AlmightyBaller.com. You can see both the Superflight pod. Sorry, that is also a tongue twister a little bit. But the Superflight pod and then Inside the Cylinder over at Almighty Baller, and a bunch of other team-specific podcasts and NBA general podcasts as well. And you know, all that good stuff. So yeah, thanks for listening in, and we look forward to hearing you know, hopefully some good Pistons stuff going forward.
Cool.
Yeah, thanks for listening, guys, and we will be back here next week.
Peace.
So there you go, everybody. That was me guesting on Inside the Cylinder with David Fernandez and Joey Mack. Thanks again, guys, for having me on. It was a blast. And that's going to do it for me today, and hopefully later, maybe Sunday, I'll have another one for you guys. Anyway, talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Cabela's is coming to Northern Virginia with a spectacular new store in Gainesville. Find everything you need for hunting, fishing, camping, and shooting sports, plus much more. Join us for our grand opening celebration Thursday, March 9th at 10 a.m. Be one of the first 500 in line and receive a Cabela's gift card worth up to $500, plus a chance to win one of three Remington firearms. See store for details. Don't miss Cabela's grand opening in Gainesville, located off I-66 and Highway 29 near Virginia Gateway.